This is Trending Mobile Technology, episode 95, hosted right here on the TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am your mobile host, Piper the DJ, right here on the Trending Topics Network with another round of Trending Mobile Technology, right here for your mobile pleasure. Now, we're changing things around a little bit. I've kind of advanced my mobile technology a little bit, and I decided, what would it be like, since I'm running a mobile podcast, to utilize mobile technology for recording and editing? And that is exactly what I am doing today. Now, before I get too carried away, really quick contact information. Hit me up on Google Plus, Gmail, or Twitter under the same handle of Piper the DJ, and I will do everything and anything that I can to get back to you as quickly as possible. First story coming in from Ultimate MJR. You can find him right here on The Real News, hosted on the Trending Topics Network. He sent me a story about Xiaomi. It's a Japanese smartphone company that they have a tendency to bring out devices that are typically non-traditional. And this story, coming in off the HuffPost, citing, quote, Xiaomi's new smartphone could be an iPhone killer. Now, I have another story that I'll be getting into later on. Matter of fact, I'm just going to go ahead and merge them together. Talking about the iPhone popularity in the Asian market. Now, the first thing we need to think about is the reputation that Apple has with their iPhone. And it's going on citing that it is very popular, it just works, it's functional. The iPhone 6 Plus actually came out off the holiday season topping sales based on supply and demand numbers. The official numbers will be coming out closer to the end of the month. But Xiaomi's new phone coming out, release approximately $375 US. It's about half the price of the iPhone 6 in the current Asian market. And the specs on this device are actually looking pretty good as well. While it's looking like it could be a supreme competitor against the iPhone 6, we also need to remember that Xiaomi is currently running Android. It is a skinned Android operating system, but it is still Android. So you have people that are currently immersed in the iOS market who might be a little hesitant to change. But bottom line, remember what I said last week, what do you want your device to do? Okay, I'm getting past iOS versus Android. Okay, I'm looking at hardware specs because the software is 100% up to the user. It's going to be determined on what everybody wants their device to do, how they want it to function, how they want it to operate, and things of that nature. The device is it's coming up in the ranks. I don't have a tech sheet on it yet, but as soon as I get that, I will be giving that a complete rundown. We will be definitely keeping an eye on Xiaomi as they bring things up and continue to move them up through the ranks and make it more and more popular. Android distribution numbers currently rolling out for January. KitKat running at 39.1 and Lollipop is still under 1%, while Froyo is still at 0.4%, Gingerbread at still 7.8, and Ice Cream Sandwich holding on with a 6.7 run at this rate. Now, what is this coming down to? Project Nexus obviously is very popular. Many people with Nexus 6 devices, many people also with older Nexus devices as well as the Nexus tablets. So why are we still under 1%? Why are the numbers still low on this? Current speculation determining that the OEMs, manufacturers of the Android devices, I won't necessarily say are to blame for this, but they're very slow when it comes to rolling out. Currently, Nexus devices are still rolling out, receiving the 5.0 update. There's a few Nexus 4 devices and Nexus 5 devices that haven't received the structured rollout yet that I'm aware of. Current Nexus 7s, the Generation 2 Nexus 7s, to my understanding, have received the Lollipop update. However, the first generation Nexus 7 has not. Now, I'm going to be watching this with interest just for the simple fact that this number shows Gingerbread still being fairly on the chart when many people were having issue with Gingerbread in the lockdown operating system. Lots of things coming up in mind. Are people changing from their manufacturers? You have individuals such as myself who recently got rid of Samsung because of their inability to provide proper updates. Something else that we need to think about and put into mind with this is that the OEMs are ultimately responsible for rolling out updates on their devices. Now, this isn't counting people that are rooted and ROMed running a custom 5.0 Jelly Bean, nor is this taking into consideration CyanogenMod Mod 12, which is also the CyanogenMod Mod version of the Lollipop build. Something else to keep into consideration here is that while many things and many devices are advancing, the OEMs, such as Samsung, such as LG, they're releasing new devices that are still on a 4.0 build. In this case, it would be KitKat. So KitKat is rising up because new devices are releasing with old software. Not quite exactly sure what everybody's thinking about this, but if you have an opinion concerning old software versus new software, hit me up, pipeofthedj@gmail.com. I would gladly have a discussion with you concerning this story. Additionally, as if Samsung was listening to me last week, as much as I would like to take credit for that, I'm not quite fully sure, but Samsung actually went out and they've started rolling out a rollout on the new operating system. They have 5.0 build getting ready to head out to the Note 4 as well as the Note Edge. It is in solid checkout. It's going to be checked out and it's going to be on the books rather soon. XDA Developers has also reported that there's many 5.0 builds for Samsung devices that are older, such as the Note 2, that started to roll out as well. There are also plenty of other manufacturers, HTC, LG, and the like, getting ready to roll out a 5.0 update on their flagship devices as well, HTC M8, as well as research into their M9 series, which is due to release here sometime, speculating Mobile World Congress, where they will be running with Lollipop as well. So we'll see what happens with those and see what we can't do about getting 5.0 a little bit higher up. Once understand, folks, I am a solid Android individual. I do have an iOS device that I use for school purposes, but I am fully immersed in the Google ecosystem, and Mr. Old School and I, we go back and forth about this on a regular basis, but the bottom line comes to what do you want your device to do? And I want it to be able to utilize my Google services. I am not the typical individual, as it's been come up many times, just for the simple fact that my device runs very hard all day, every day. It's a working device, and it is constantly on the go with me. And so therefore, my use case scenario, for example, with my Nexus 6, wouldn't be the same use case scenario as with somebody else. My Note 2, for example, also, that ran very hard, and I was starting to run into problems with it later on, of which I won't bore you with all the gory details concerning that. But all in all, it is an overall good operating system. There's many people citing that there's issues with it, and with every new operating system that comes out, you need to understand that there's going to be problems out of the gate, okay? One person on the East Coast might not have the same problems as one person on the West Coast. Android and the folks at Google are doing a very good job at keeping on top of these minor fixes, minor bug fixes, etc. We are up to 5.02 on some builds, depending on where you're at and what type of issues you're having. But all in all, 5.0, I would give an above standard rating. At this time, I'd give it probably 7 on 10. It's not perfect, but it does very well for what it is supposed to do. Also, I like to believe, in response to my most recent recording, Samsung has also announced the official release of their Galaxy A7, and the folks at Phone Arena have decided to take it and they put it against the Galaxy S5 and the Apple iPhone 6. Now, understand, folks, I am not going to get into operating systems anymore on this. I've fought that battle I don't know how many times. The software side of things isn't necessarily my forte. I can voice experience based on my personal experience with it as well. But when it comes to software, there's so many different fine lines and so many different hairs that you need to split when it comes to determining exactly what is going on with the software, okay? My use case for the iOS would be different from, say, Brian from Tunes. My use case for Android would be different, say, from Jason Rivera or MJR. So we need to understand that. I'm going to do my best to avoid comparing software to software, okay? Now, there are quite a few times where I'll say, yeah, the iOS, they're saying, oh, they're excited about being able to make Wi-Fi calling. Those of us in the Android market will say, well, we've been able to do that for a long time. What's your deal? Stuff like that, it's a petty difference, okay? People in the iOS environment, they do what they do and they like what they like. Why? Because it just works. People in the Android operating system, they do what they do. They like what they like. Why? Well, open source is one. Compatibility with other applications and software packages is another. Third aspect, like for me, might be troubleshooting. I like to figure out how things work, get things to work together that might not typically work together in most cases. Plenty of developers that are out there, plenty of people supporting many different aspects of operating systems as well. So I'm going to do my best to table comparing software to software, unless we get like a huge press release that comes out where there's a blatant sandboxing. And sometimes that can be good, sometimes that can be bad, but the comparisons between the two, I'm going to try and keep that to a minimum from here on out. So as far as the Galaxy A7 compared to the Galaxy S5, the A7 is running 444 with the TouchWiz overlay. Now the S5 was released with 442, but there is a 5.0 structured rollout that's going out. Screen size is 5.94 by 300 by 0.25 compared to 5.59 at 2.85 at 0.32. It's a little bit bigger, a little bit larger. Weight is less than the S5 at 4.97 ounces, where the S5 is 5.11. You're looking at a metal body versus plastic. However, the plastic body on the Galaxy S5 is water and dust resistant with an IP67 rating. Overall, screen size is a little bit bigger with a 5.5 inch versus a 5.1. Resolution is 1080 by 1920, which is the same with the S5, with a pixel density of 401. Now, this is a little bit lower than the Galaxy S5 with a 432 PPI. Both screens are Super AMOLED. The body ratio, however, on the screen size is 72.54% versus a 69.76%. Megapixels on the camera is a little bit lower. You got a 13 megapixel rear shooter versus a 16 megapixel shooter on the Galaxy S5. Now, where am I going with all this? With the quote unquote unofficial failure of the Galaxy S5, Samsung went on the books and said, we need to be overwhelming with these specs. We need to be able to bring it. And the Galaxy A7 looks like it is doing that. Looks like they've stepped up the screen size a little bit. They've lowered the weight a little bit. You know, the camera is a little bit lower. But all in all, I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to knock my socks off. The battery on it is 2600 mAh versus 2800 mAh on the Galaxy S5. It has all the resident hookups, you know, for data and LTE and all that kind of crazy stuff. But all in all, it doesn't look too awful overwhelming. First case, use case scenario, it's showing functional. I mean, it would be able to keep up with the Galaxy S5. Is the Galaxy S5 a comparable phone against the A7? For price point, yes. Going against the iPhone 6, obviously it's got the better camera, it's got the bigger screen. Overall, it's got the tighter pixel density and the bigger screen-to-body ratio. However, the biggest thing that people are holding against the A7 when it comes to the iPhone 6 is the recording formats, where the A7 has an MPEG-4 compression as well as 1920 by 1080, giving you a 1080 HD. The iPhone 6 only records at 720p. So that's something that's going against the, going with the A7. It's giving a benefit to the Samsung folks. All in all, not too awful much going on in the forms of Samsung, but the A7 looks like it is an attempt to support and promote the Samsung ecosystem. Once again, remember, this is TouchWiz that we're talking about, folks. So the TouchWiz operating, or the TouchWiz skin, it's going to give you the same problems that you always have with TouchWiz. It's slow, it's laggy, it's buggy. Some people like it, other people hate it. Okay, I'm one of those guys. TouchWiz was everywhere on a Samsung device unless you went with the custom ROM. There's a way to get around it with a custom launcher, but once again, it's still running in the background. There is no way to completely disable the TouchWiz. The folks at PhoneDog, they went down and did a comparison, 12 reasons why Nexus 6 is better than iPhone. My case, I'm simplifying this down to 5 reasons for the simple fact that one of the reasons that they have on there is citing comparing operating system to operating system, and I completely disregard that. First thing they're looking at is the resolution. With a 5.96 on the Nexus 6, you're looking at 2560 by 1440. There's a higher pixel density, where the iPhone is only running at 1920 by 1080. Now, the bottom line on this is, do you want to be able to run HD? Do you want to run 1080 or do you want to run 720? If you're shooting high-definition video, then yes. If you just want something for streaming, selfie cams, you know, a little bit of video pics, a popular thing nowadays is people pull out their phones to do little quick photo shots or perhaps some video clips. It's become pretty popular at the paintball field, where a lot of people will pull their phones out and do little video clips for shooting and learning and things of that nature. Front-facing stereo speakers, it works in favor of the Nexus 6, and I can definitely say that because when I'm doing video editing or something of that nature, it's nice to be able to hear directly and exactly what is going on with that particular audio clip, whether it be just audio or whether it be audio and video. Don't have to worry about cupping my phone around the back or listening to sound distortion or anything of that nature. There is also great notifications. The notifications adaptability with the Nexus 6 is superior to that of just about anything else. Some people could look at that and say, oh, that's talking software. I understand that. It's a difference. There is, however, notifications widgets that are built into the iOS operating system. And if you want to determine that notifications are based on software, that is totally your determination. Fast charging is one thing that works in great favor for the Nexus 6. It's got a quick charger that comes with it. It also works very efficiently on just a standard 2-amp charger as well with a standard cable. You've got more RAM as well as a more powerful processor on the Nexus 6, which trumps the iPhone 6. Some people could look at that and say, yeah, sure, you know, more RAM, more processor, newer phone, okay? There's only a difference of about 3 months here, folks. So something else to remember with that as well. It's more ergonomically constructed. The Nexus 6, it does have a curve on the back. I mean, if you look at it and lay it down on its back, there is a little bit of a curve, makes it ergonomically correct. Mine goes in a case, so therefore the ergonomics don't necessarily benefit me, but I also have bigger hands. And last of all, they're looking at the price. Now, granted, most of these devices you can get on contract depending on your carrier. You can also get them subsidized. You can also get them on, depending on who your carrier is, there is a deferred payment. T-Mobile favors the jump. Verizon has their 1UP and AT&T. I don't believe they have theirs anymore, but it's not necessarily contract. And there's also the lease program, which I broke down as being a not very good idea in the most recent. Folks coming in from Microsoft citing that in their mobile devices, they're not going to do an 8.1. They're just going to jump straight to mobile 10. Now, Windows Mobile 10 is supposed to be released later on this month, and I intend to have a complete breakdown on it here as soon as it comes out with specs as well as operations and things of that nature. But Microsoft making a big splash, jumping 9, going straight to 10, and it's supposed to be a seamless operating system. Sent a message off to Mr. Old School earlier this week concerning Windows Mobile 10, as he is my authority when it comes to all things Microsoft. He's waiting patiently for it. Yeah, he knows some people that have used Windows 10. Ultimate MJR, in a conversation with him last week, he has downloaded the demo and used it, and he is very surprised with it. I, at home, I don't have any Windows boxes, okay? I run Linux. I run Mac. So, therefore, Windows isn't necessarily something that gets into my end of the world, so I wouldn't be the perfect person on the use case. But overall, surveys are currently favorable for Microsoft Windows 10. Now, a new device that Microsoft is getting ready to release, they've got some new phones that are getting ready to come out as well in their discussion and workings with Nokia. They recently released an article for Phone Insider that provides similar access to Windows 10 Insider program, allowing enthusiasts and partners to test an early version of Windows 10 for their smart devices. While the app only works for Microsoft employees at the time, Microsoft will be expanding its use to allow anyone to sign up to install Windows 10 on modern phones. No listing currently as to what devices it's going to be compatible with, but the release date for Windows 10 is currently slated for 21 January. Now, Consumer Electronics Show was a couple weeks ago, and LG made a huge splash with the release of their LG G Flex 2. And many folks have taken a very quick liking to it, to a point where they've taken the LG G Flex 2 and compared it against the Nexus 6. Now, the head-on comparison currently cites that the LG is favorable to the Nexus 6 with their platforms. The recently launched G Flex 2 has a major advantage to the form with the latest Qualcomm Snapdragon 810 chipset, which is a long shot from the quad-core 1.5 gigahertz Cortex quad 2 gigahertz on the Nexus 6. Also, it's coming with the Crate 450 CPU versus the Adreno 420, and overall, technology has just stepped up. The major advantage that a lot of people are giving the G Flex is it comes with a micro SD that's compatible up to 128 gigs. Now, this brings a different perspective to my mind for the simple fact that when I switched over from my Note 2 to the Nexus 6, I was a little hesitant because I was like, well, it's not going to have the expandable memory. What am I going to do? Folks, I'm going to tell you, I've had my Nexus 6 for about 2 weeks now, and I'm finding I don't really need the added memory. With as much as I do in the cloud, with the unlimited data that I'm given by T-Mobile and things of that nature, I don't really need that extra memory. I mean, I carry music around with me, but I'm also very efficient with what I put in and what I take out. You know, I don't let stuff sit on my device for any longer than it actually needs to be. Some people are citing that, oh, they need the SD card. But I'll tell you, I've got a 32 gig Nexus 6. I'm perfectly happy with it. You know, I thought, well, 32, 64, and I tossed it around in my head. Did I want to wait the extra time to get the 64? No. I thought I'd give the 32 a try because my tablet's 32, and I went on from there. And I'm finding that having that SD, while the SD card can add a percentage of a battery drain, I'll let you know that right now, it's not really necessary for my environment. Some people say, oh, I need the SD card so I can put movies on it, things of that nature. Majority of the places you go have some form of Wi-Fi, okay? And all in all, how are you using your device? Are you using it as an entertainment console or are you using it for what it's supposed to be used for? My opinion, if you need that extra storage for movies or extra music or things of that nature, there's plenty of other ways to utilize external memory. You get an OTG cable. You can sync it up with portable drives. You can use a cloud, various things of that nature. So many things as far as the SD necessity in the environment, that argument is tending to slant downhill for me. My personal preference and use case, as I cited, it's not the most up and up thing. It's not as hardcore necessary as it used to be. I'm finding, especially running with the Nexus 6, that I don't need the extra space for an operating system that I used to need, where on a 16 gig device, half of the memory would be taken up with the operating system. Understand, that was with Samsung. Okay? I don't know the size of the ROMs currently for the LG G Flex 2, but they might need that added SD. Okay? The Nexus 6, I pulled that out of the box, 32 gig memory. Only about 3% of that was utilized for the operating system. Now, I'm going to do everything that I can to keep my Nexus 6 stock. I'm not going to root it, have no intention of ROMing it, just for the simple fact I want to see exactly what the device is capable of with what it has. Now, my Nexus 7, my tablet, recently I rooted that because I needed to be able to sideload a couple apps that are they require root. Next story coming in from Android GS, the 502 update for the Nexus 4, 5, 7, and 10 might not be coming at all. Some of you devices, and I went over this at the head of the show, where Lollipop is still at 0.1%, or it's less than 1%. Those numbers have probably gone up a little bit. But the 501 isn't necessarily going to be rolled out to some of the older devices. 502 might not. 503, Google is currently in the works of a 503 build, which is going to continue to fix some of the holes that are in the Android operating system. They're currently working with developers to get that off the ground. And some of you folks that have not received the 50 update yet, you're still on a 444 and you're waiting patiently, 503 is due on the books very soon, and that's going to make a structured rollout very, very quickly. Now, to let you know, my Nexus 7, the second generation, is currently running 502. Many of you out there that are running in Project Nexus, Nexus 4, Nexus 5, Nexus 7, Nexus 10, depending on where you're located, you might be running 502. My first suggestion to you is go check for updates. Sometimes, in certain situations as well, you can download the ROM and sideload it as well. And information like that is available online. If you just Google your device name and work on sideloading it, then you can move forward from there. Many people are getting excited over the Nexus 6 and its ability to work with wearables. Now, granted, the Nexus 6, a lot of people argued against the Nexus 6 based on its size. I like bigger phones. I like the phablets. Many surveys are starting to emerge as to what phablets are better and what phablets can you not live without. Now, I found that My Nexus 6 is a great note-taking device. I'm utilizing my Nexus 7 more for textbooks and checking my email and maintaining things of that nature. But all in all, the Nexus 6, the size on it, it's not too awful big of an issue for me. I'm finding that I like the added size and the 5.94 inch display. I mean, it's not as big of a transition as I thought it would be. Now, when it comes to wearables, there's still lots of discussion as to which wearable is best. You know, whether it be the Moto 360 or anything in the Android Wear space, Google Glass, etc. Which, by the way, the Explorer Pack is no longer available for those of you that are interested in Google Glass. Lots of speculation as to what's going to happen next with it. Samsung is stepping up their game in their Galaxy VR, where they're still working hand-in-hand with the folks at Oculus to make something better and get something better off the ground. But the bottom line and the ultimately speaking here, wearables, there's still too much to be desired with them. Now, remember, last week I mentioned it off of CES, the folks at LG, they have come out with a complete cross-platform wearable. It hasn't been released to the masses yet, but many people at LG are working on this, and it looks like it's going to be making a big old splash. Lots of developers got an opportunity to get up close with this device, and a lot of people are getting excited about it because it will go from Android to iOS. It'll go from iOS to Windows. It's supposed to be a completely customizable wearable, and it is also supposed to work the way that it's supposed to. Now, a lot of people, once again, coming back to the story that I was referring to with the Nexus 6, yeah, you're going to need a bigger pocket. If you're like me, you're going to get a case for it and put it on your hip. Perfectly frank, the Nexus 6 goes in and out of any of my pockets very easily. The Note 2 as well did the same thing. One of the first things that I bought with my Nexus 6 was a case, and there are plenty of cases that are out there, not necessarily an OtterBox, but it is a durable case, does very good at keeping it water resistant, keeping the ports clean, keeping the device comfortable and safe as I continue moving on. Now, I continue to bring up cases for devices for the simple fact that it's going to bring me into my question of the week. And those of you who are interested, you can reach out to me, Piper the DJ on Twitter, okay? Find me on the Twitter machine. Unfortunately, I don't have a hashtag like many other people who do on the network, just for the simple fact that any hashtag that I try and come up with is already being utilized by somebody else. So if you just mention me in a tweet, Piper the DJ, you can find me that way. Do you use a case on your device? And I'm not talking about a flip case. I'm talking about a case that will actually offer significant protection for your device. The reason why I bring this up, I work with public all the time, and I see loads and loads of different devices coming through, whether it be new devices, old devices. I saw an iPhone 6 Plus just before Christmas, had an opportunity to mess around with that a little bit. I've seen the I've seen the Galaxy Note Edge. I've seen a Note 4. So I've actually had an opportunity to see all these devices up close. And the thing that really bugged me, it hurt, actually. It hurt. I had an individual come in the door with a brand new iPhone 6 Plus. And it had a cracked screen. I was upset. I saw somebody else walk in a couple days later with a Nexus 6 that had a cracked screen, okay? That is my biggest fear. Now, a lot of people who are advocates for the naked department, the naked movement, and if you go back into the archives, I mentioned the naked movement at one point in time where there is a group of people who feel their device is beautiful and they want to show it off. However, your device might be beautiful, But how beautiful is it when it's got a cracked screen? How functional is it when it has a cracked screen? How does that make you feel? Now, maybe you're not like me. I'm a klutz, okay? I get in a hurry. When I get in a hurry, I tend to drop things. When I drop things, depending on what it is, it has a tendency to break. I did drop my Nexus 6 once before it was in a case. Granted, it was at home, so it was on the carpet, but still, you can just feel your heart drop, just like, oh my God, okay? But there are ways to protect your device. If you're like me, first thing I want to do, I want to get a case for my device. Why? Because I want to keep it looking nice. Yeah, sure, it's going to be abused. It's going to go out and about, and it's going to get dropped and tossed and maybe run over. For the longest time, I swore by OtterBox for the simple fact that I've thrown my toolbox on top of an OtterBox, and the phone has been fine. I've run it over with a fork truck. It's flown off a fork truck. It's flown off the top of the truck before, okay? And it's been fine. But OtterBox isn't necessarily just the number one. Once again, folks, just because the words come out of my mouth don't necessarily mean it's correct. But the thing that we need to remember is there are cases that are available that will support your device. Amazon is a great resource for looking for this. If you don't necessarily have a particular manufacturer, I mean, I went and I just typed it into Amazon. Protective case for the Nexus 6. Boom. Couple popped up. I was able to get one on 2-day shipping. Boom. It came in. Phone went in it. Runs like a champ. Doesn't hinder the functionality of the device. Yeah, sure, it hides some of the prettiness of the back and maybe the screen, but it does what it's supposed to do. I want to protect my devices. I mean, a big story and a lot of flack that I get from some people is my Nexus 7. When I first got it, I pulled it out of the box. I had school starting in less than a week, so I had to go out with my Nexus 7, not in a case, and I dropped it. And I cracked the screen within a week of owning it, okay? It's mortifying, folks. It cuts down on the functionality. It cuts down on the being sexy of the device. Cuts down on the streamlining. Now, they've got a lot of flip cases that are out there that offer a form of protection for your device, but it's not complete functionality or protection for your device. So if you could, this week's question of the week: what type of case do you use for your device? If you use one, or even if you support the naked movement, let me know about that too, and why you support the naked movement. And that's what it's called, folks. It's called the naked movement. It doesn't mean we're all moving to a nudist colony. I mean, really? Come on. No, it's talking about a naked device. And more technologists are getting on with that. Unfortunately, I can't go there. I'm too big of a klutz. I'm too protective of my devices. I want them to stay looking sharp. I want them to continue to look nice. Big story this week, and I'm going to be wrapping this up here. It's going to be a little bit short, but I am starting to run short on time here. Big story this week coming in off of the folks at We Live Security, WeLiveSecurity.com. They released a story concerning Android where, quote, critical security updates canceled for 939 million Android users. And the story does go on, citing how many devices still running on the Jelly Bean operating system are no longer receiving security patches because it had something to do with the security researchers discovered that Google was ending support for WebView on earlier versions of Android when attempting to report the bug to AOSP browser. Now, here's how to get around this. WebView is what is the primary browser, okay? So those of you that have Android, I'm going to talk to you for a minute here primarily, just for the simple fact that Windows utilizes the Internet Explorer, as well as iOS utilizes Mobile Safari. Now, In many Android cases, when you go into your application drawer and scroll to the eyes, because typically speaking, they're organized alphabetically, you see internet browser or internet. The typical icon for this application is just a round ball, okay? For those of you that are old school AT&T fans, it looks like their original logo. It's been changed a little bit, but you know what I'm saying. Round blue ball looks like a globe, okay? That is the application that is the crux of these internet problems. If you update your browser to something Chrome or Internet Explorer or Firefox, it will resolve a majority of these problems. It won't resolve all of them, but it will resolve a majority. Now, this 939 million Android users, understand, folks, these are devices that are greater than 3 years old. They're running on the Jelly Bean operating system. Also need to understand, majority of these devices are from OEMs and manufacturers that refuse to update their operating system. Manufacturers like Samsung, LG, HTC. Remember, the rule of thumb, folks, average lifespan on a mobile device is 2 to 3 years. Okay? What have I said many times before? Pick your device and then skip a year. Update it every 2 years. Update it every 3 years. 4, 5 years, you're going to start running into some performance issues. A, because you're going to run into compatibility. And B, you're going to run into problems like this. Security. Okay? Folks like Mr. Old School who run a device until it's done, that's different because that's Microsoft. Folks that are like Brian from Tunes who run iPhones, that's a little bit different because, yeah, sure, it's controlled by Apple, but technically speaking, stepping it all the way up and going over the edge with it, you're not going to have these problems. Android is open source. Yes, Google is in control of a lot of it. But the primary problem that we're running into here is the web view, which ultimately comes down from the manufacturer. People are coming down on Google. Google says, yes, we're not supporting it because it's not our responsibility. It's up to the manufacturer. Remember, all those devices that Samsung puts out, all those devices that LG puts out throughout the course of a year, I mean, why should Google be required to update a device that they don't have control of? They don't run the skin. They just have the underlying operating system. These manufacturers, they are the ones who are responsible for putting their sauce on. Okay? They are the ones responsible for making your device what it either can or cannot do. Remember this. A lot of people are putting Google under fire saying, you have to do this. No, technically speaking, Google doesn't. Now, while Android is their operating system, they can push out an update and they can say, okay, this is what we want to do. But ultimately, it comes down to the OEM and the manufacturer. Why? Because the OEM and the manufacturer is responsible for rolling out the update to your device. If you have further questions about this, I'm going to be keeping track of this story just for the simple fact that it is something that interests me. Security is something that interests anybody in the mobile industry. I've said it plenty of times. If you're on the internet, privacy and security is a paradox. Okay? And I'm going to continue saying it. If you don't want anybody getting your stuff, you better get off the web. Bottom line. I mean, Facebook, they just updated their privacy policies, and so many people, oh my goodness, I'm getting so disgusted with people. There's this post going around, and I'm sure many of you have seen it. I, being of sound mind and body, do not give Facebook permission to repost anything, blah, 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 blah. Guess what, folks? Facebook, in all their might and glory, doesn't care. All right? If you think you're going to go against Facebook, go right ahead. Real simple. If you don't like what they're doing, don't use the service. And I say that to Android as well. Okay, if you have an Android device and you're hearing about this story for the first time where there's security holes in the Jelly Bean build and you don't like it, unfortunately, it pains me to say it, but switch. I personally use the rule of thumb, I upgrade my device every 2 years. 3 years max, that's the average lifespan. My Nexus 7 second generation, that's going to be due for an upgrade next year. Hopefully, and I say this very enthusiastically, hopefully they'll have a tablet that'll be worth my time. Last year they didn't come out with the new Nexus 10. It wasn't my desire to go for a Nexus 10. I have no interest in getting a Nexus 9. Next year in the fall, maybe the spring, I'll be due up for a new tablet. I'll also be due up for a new iPad. So what am I going to do? I don't know. It depends on what's out there. Currently, I'm extremely happy with the Nexus line, okay? I switched over to the Nexus 6, very happy with it. It's got a couple bugs in it, but I'm patient enough to where I can work around them. T-Mobile has released a story as well, and I only bring this story up for the simple fact that I am a T-Mobile user. Verizon has a new ad campaign, which is bringing under fire T-Mobile's coverage and their usability, citing that they are the most reliable and largest wireless provider with their XLTE, blah, 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 blah. But the thing that Verizon fails to mention to everybody is they're overcrowded. They might have the biggest network and they might have the most reliable network, but they don't have enough going through the pipes. Verizon is running into the same problem that Sprint has been going through for the past 10 years. Remember how for many times I've put Sprint under fire? They have finally, with their Spark service, which is their 8x8, they have finally started to bring themselves up. They've started to convert themselves and dig themselves out of the hole that they've been in for I don't know how long, 10 years at least. I mean, when Sprint and Nextel merged, that's when their problem started because they had two networks that weren't functioning together efficiently. Now, with the advancement of Spark and the dispersion and the rollout that they're getting in the better network, the more reliable, they are stepping their game up and they are getting better. Yes, I said it, folks. Sprint is getting better. Verizon coming down citing that their network is better than T-Mobile. You know, to be completely honest, T-Mobile is turning themselves into, quote, the Un-carrier. They came out with that campaign years ago, and they are continuing to show that they are willing to do what it takes to help people out. Ultimate Wi-Fi calling. Hello? I mean, who doesn't have a Wi-Fi network at their house now? I mean, I believe I was looking at a report at some point in time, greater than 70% of the global population has a Wi-Fi connection either at home or that they're on regular basis, okay? T-Mobile, they have Wi-Fi calling built in. It's part of the T-Mobile sauce. Okay, understand that. It's part of the T-Mobile sauce, but it is built into their devices. Apple coming out with iOS 8, citing that they had Wi-Fi calling built into theirs. You need to understand, though, just because you have Wi-Fi calling doesn't mean you can use it. Your network has to be able to support Wi-Fi calling as well. T-Mobile, they're also sending out microcells. Being on Google Voice now 100% of the time, I don't have to worry about Wi-Fi calling. It's all data. I went on last week about name another guy who gets excited about getting his bill and looking at it saying minutes used, zero. Why? Because it's all data to me. I'm on a Wi-Fi network at home. I'm on a Wi-Fi network at work. I'm on a Wi-Fi network at school. The only thing I have to make sure is that I'm close enough to the antenna when I make a call. Big deal. Okay? T-Mobile is taking steps. Verizon with their disbursement of their XLTE. I mean, there's a lot of people that are giving two different sides of this argument. And whether it's a good argument or a bad argument, I haven't fully decided yet. But ultimately speaking, Verizon is overcharging for everything. They're offering four-line family plan for $120, 10 gigs of data. You go over, you're going to get smacked. Okay? T-Mobile's plans, they're all up, they're all unlimited. Just about any plan you get on with T-Mobile is unlimited. Now, it's not unlimited LTE. So after you use up so many gigs, they will throttle you, which is their perfect right. But with the usage of Wi-Fi and the usage of tethering and being able to know what your device is capable of doing, you don't have to worry about it. They also have unlimited plans that are out there that are unlimited LTE. Some people utilize that on a regular basis. But all in all, the bottom line on this, Verizon is citing that, hey, they're better than anybody else. While they might be better than anyone else, their functionality, their network is clunky, people getting dropped calls, I mean, data being spotty when you're traveling. Don't get me wrong. Verizon's got a good network in the United States. But if you're traveling and you're on a phone call, do you expect to be able to stay on that phone call from going across the state? Okay? The odds of being able to do that with Verizon are slim. Do you think you're going to be able to utilize data going across the state? The odds of being able to do that are a little slim. Okay? There's going to be dropouts. There's going to be cuts. You're going to switch from one antenna to another. If you switch from one antenna to another and that antenna is full, guess what? You're sorry out of luck. Okay? Verizon, they have their place. Okay? Don't get me wrong. They have their place. If you want to pay the extra money for Verizon, you go right ahead. My opinion, for what you get, it's overpriced. I mean, Verizon now is getting where Sprint was 10 years ago. When Sprint started going downhill, now Sprint is finally getting around and they're pulling themselves up with by their bootstraps and they're getting themselves to a place where they need to be. However, the flip side to this, Verizon is starting to go downhill. They are still the largest network. They still have the most subscribers. They're still number one. AT&T is catching up to them. T-Mobile, with their Un-carrier plans, they continue to gain ground. I mean, granted, there's still some space between them and Sprint, but they are growing in popularity. Is it going to be a point where Verizon's going to get knocked out of first place anytime soon? No, but probably by the end of 2020, Verizon will be looking at number two, maybe number three. Because Sprint, once again, they're coming back on the upswing. As I said, they're improving their network. And T-Mobile is coming up quickly. I believe 15% market share is what T-Mobile was looking at towards the middle of 2013. Those numbers will be coming out here in the next couple months, and I will make sure to give them to you as they are available to me. Now, folks, I know this episode is going to be a little bit short, but I do have a class to get to as I continue on my mobile quest to make sure that everybody stays educated on mobile technology. As always, I'm your host, Piper the DJ, and we are right here on the TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. Brand new TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. We got great shows, folks. We got old school at the movies. We got Anything Goes. We got NFL Easy Picks. All wine aside, we got Tunes. We got Tunes Game Time. And, of course, the real news with MJR. And you can always find me here as well. Once again, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me, PiperTheDJ@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter under the handle PiperTheDJ and Google Plus under the same handle. From all of us to all of you on the mobile scene, I'm Piper the DJ, taking a bite out of the mobile space. Good night.